Good morning. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you along with us today for another edition of Garden Talk. And with us by telephone is Mel Myers of Milwaukee, host of the PBS television show Great Lakes Gardener, taught horticulture at MATC in Milwaukee, and the author of many gardening books. And it's a pleasure to have Mel on the phone. Hi.
Hi, Jim. It's great to be with you.
Where are you today?
I'm basically in Milwaukee. I had to do a TV appearance, and I just wasn't sure I'd make it in time because, you know me, I always like to be in person in the studio, and it's a good excuse to visit Madison and see the gardens in the area.
Well, it would be a good day to be here or be anywhere. It's a beautiful day for gardening. And there is a sort of a discouraging note in that the emerald ash borer has now been found in at least two locations in Wisconsin. Your thoughts about the borer?
Well, you know, I think like everyone, we knew it was coming, but we were really hoping we had a little more time. And I think it's a frightening and very disheartening for gardeners. You know, I think University of Wisconsin Extension has and the DNR have done a nice job of getting information out there to try to keep it in perspective so that, you know, if you're in the area, you know, they've invoked a quarantine, so plants, ash trees can't be moved out of the area from nurseries. Firewood really shouldn't, ash firewood shouldn't be leaving anybody's home anyway, just as a precaution in general. And those are the first steps we need to take. And I know DADCAP will be taking some, doing some town hall meetings and doing a little more aggressive plan. I was reading some news from Phil and Chris Williams from UW Extension, the entomology department, saying, you know, Chris was saying that, you know, it's kind of the time of the year where the ash borers are staying put. They won't be in their flying mode till spring, that we should keep an eye on it, kind of watch what's happening. The bad news is this ash borer can be in the tree a couple years before we notice the damage, a thinning of the crown, you know, deteriorating health, then you notice the D-shaped exit hole. So, you know, the borer can be present before we know, and I think that's what's kind of a little frustrating for us as well. So I think it's one of these things to stay tuned. I'm going to have some information and links to the extension sites on my website. I'm sure you guys do, too. So I think if you're in the area, you're going to get a lot of information on what you're going to need to do in the next couple of months. If you're 10 to 12 miles away, you know, monitor the health of your ash trees, which you should have been doing anyway. If you suspect anything, you know, contact a professional. Realizing, you know, if you do injections and spray, it may or may not save your tree down the long haul. So you really need to know that that's one way you can manage the pest to prevent it, but depending on what's decided, it may not be the solution. So I think for right now, just kind of monitor what's happening if you're not in the area and keep your ears open and keep in tune. That's what I think all of us are doing as well.
And for people who want to follow along today on your website, just go to Melinda Myers, MYERS.com.
MYERS.com, right.
Okay. And we'll take your calls. We've got a couple lines open in Madison at 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Let's go to the phones, Mel, and we'll start with Lou in Kenosha. Hi, Lou.
Hi, Jim. Hi, Melinda.
Hi, Lou.
Hey, I've been waiting for you to be on.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad you were able to join me, and I was able to be here.
Yeah, me too. When I heard about it, I thought, boy, I got to be home.
And that's not my cousin either, Jim.
No, I'm no relation. I've only seen a picture.
How can I help you?
Okay. I have Annabelle hydrangeas.
Okay.
And they are prolific. And I have an area where I really want to not have to weed anymore, so I want to transplant some of these things. And if I recall correctly, but I'm getting old and I forget things easily, it seems to me like I cut them back in the fall and waited until they started to sprout from the wood and then transplanted them in the spring.
Yeah, I really like, you can either leave them stand for winter to enjoy the winter interest, and some people like it, some people think it's unsightly, but they're good and hardy, so either way is fine. But you're right, if you cut them back either any time during the dormant season when just as growth begins, it's sometimes easier to see where those plants are, or even just before it, but the soil's workable, is a great time. You can dig and divide them. Even though they're a shrub, they respond very much like a perennial, a little bit tougher to dig and divide, but that's a great way to move them to a new location or start some new plants to fill in that new area.
Yeah, and I've heard the suggestion that alternating them with a red smoke bush makes a really pretty landscape.
Oh, I hadn't thought of it, but I would think that nice red foliage would really be nice against the green leaves of the Annabelle, and then the white flowers would stand out nicely again.
Yeah, and even when they turn green, which they're doing now.
Right.
Yeah.
Great idea. So, Thanks for sharing that.
I'm hoping that our local Steins has has red smoke trees.
You know, one of the good things, not only Steins, but other nurseries and garden centers around the state, more and more there's a big push for fall planting. And I'm a big fan of it. Honestly, you know, 20-some years ago, I'm thinking, why would we plant before winter? But really, when you look at it, if you can get plants in the ground now through, you know, early October, the soil's still nice and warm. They have time to do some rooting, get established, especially if you can make sure they're properly watered. And sometimes winter is less stressful on our plants than summers have been lately with the hot and the dry weather. So, yeah, this is a great, you know, late summer, early spring is a great time so you can get your smoke bushes in and then move your hydrangeas in the spring.
All right, Lou, good luck to you. Thanks very much for the call. A number for you in Madison, 263-1890, or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Arlene next in West Allis. Hello, Arlene.
Good morning. Good morning, Melinda.
Hi, Arlene.
We were at the state fair and saw you there, but I didn't have time to ask you questions.
Okay.
I have three tomato plants all on the south side of the house. They get probably 6 to 8 hours of sun.
Okay.
And they're pretty tall. They're on those cages.
Okay.
Now, I just wonder, there's a lot of tomatoes on the bottom, and I'm getting blossoms on the top. Would it be better to pinch off the blossoms on the top so the tomatoes that are on the vines ripen? Because they're not ripening. I have a yellow one, I have a pink one, and I have cherry tomatoes.
That's a great question, Arlene, and I think with the late start of the season, with the cool spring, the soils were cool, things, you know, our tomatoes, for many of us, you know, there's always those people that have red tomatoes early, but for most of us, things are just starting to ripen, and my ones in my container have nice big fruit. They're not ripening. The ones in the ground that got in a little late are just, you know, the fruits are small and developing, so I'm with you there. One thing I usually do is I usually like to wait till early September, but if you feel you have enough blossoms and fruit already on the plants, pinching out the growing tip won't hurt. The idea, for those who aren't familiar with it, Arlene, is indeterminate tomatoes grow and grow and grow, and they flower and fruit all along the stems until the frost kills the top. And like you're concerned, they're putting lots of energy into flowering and new fruit, where if we tip them off, remove the growing tip, then they're not producing more flowers, not producing more fruit, so the energy goes into ripening and developing the fruit that's already on the plant. So if you feel like that's the case, that you have plenty of tomatoes, you could tip them now. If you're feeling like, yeah, a few more would be good, because we really do have a good 2 months, hopefully, of the growing and ripening season left, you might want to wait until early September. Same goes with squash, too. Many people with their winter squash, or if their pumpkins don't seem to be developing at the rate they want, will often tip off the vining-type plants for the same, doing the same thing. Once you get the fruit you need, you can tip it out, and then all that energy goes to ripening.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Arlene. And thanks for visiting with me at the fair.
And appreciate hearing from you. Let's go to Mike next in Oregon. Hello, Mike. What's on your mind today?
A couple questions. Number one, we've got a mountain ash. Should I be worried about that being infected by the emerald ash borer?
It's not a true ash. It's really a relative of the crab apples and pears in the rose family. They do have problems with other kind of borers, flathead and round-headed borers. Fortunately, though, if you keep your mountain ash in good shape, those borers only attack stress trees. And one of the problems I see with mountain ash when they do get a borer is usually it's heat and drought stress. European mountain ash are native to Europe. They like cooler summers than we often have. And so putting mulch around the base of the tree, making sure you insulate the roots of that tree, don't pile it around the base, that's one good way to make sure that that tree stays healthy. Watering it during dry periods as well is a good way to make sure that it's not being stressed. So those are some things you can do. So the emerald ash borer isn't a problem, but just the other borers. But again, the good news is only if the tree is stressed. So proper care will take care of it.
I have a second question.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
We have a juniperberry that we bought from Jung's three, four years ago.
Okay.
It didn't fruit this year. What should we be doing?
One that I'm, to be honest, I'm not that familiar with. But
it's a cross between a gooseberry and a currant.
Pardon me?
It's a cross between a gooseberry and a currant.
Right, and I've not grown it, but I've heard some poor fruiting on currants as well. One, depending on your spring conditions, with the cool, wet weather, we did have some poor pollination. That may be part of the issue. This is a year-old plant, you said, or how old?
Oh, it's 3-4 years old.
3 or 4 years.
How should we prune Ribes plants?
Right, and that was going to be my next comment, is pruning might be part of the issue. With those, you want to take out a couple of the older stems right back to ground level to open it up for better light penetration and air circulation. You can remove some of the growing tips if it's overwhelming and too big for the site, but minimal pruning, and usually by removing a few older stems right back to ground level, that gives you enough air and light flow. It controls the size. If you do, you know, a stem or two every year, that's usually sufficient for keeping them under control. If they're bigger, you can pull them back again. But I'm wondering if the cool temperatures, because I'm getting reports around the state, too, of plants that normally are doing well not as well because of the cool, wet weather, not a lot of pollination. So pruning.
Pruning time.
The best time if you're going to remove the full stems is late winter, and then you're opening it up for good flowering and fruiting to happen.
Thank you.
All right, Mike, thanks very much for the call.
Question. And can I just mention, Jim?
Yes, indeed.
Tomorrow is the Wisconsin Arborist Association is sponsoring Arbor Fest, and it's a great event in Appleton at Pierce Park. So I'm hoping listeners in that area come and join us. I'll be speaking on tree death by good intention, so just giving some tree care hints at from 10:30 to 12:30, but the best part of the show is the arborists are having their tree climbing competition, so you can see professionals at work showing off their skills as they compete. And if you've never seen it, it's really very fascinating. So
you did this last year in Madison, did you not?
Exactly.
At Warner Park?
Right. And so this year they're moving it around, and I want to thank you because we had a lot of listeners stop by and see me on Saturday, so I'm hoping the same thing happens tomorrow. Is if you're in the Fox Valley area, come visit me at Pierce Park in Appleton. There'll be good signs throughout. And it's at the 1100 block of West Prospect Street in Appleton. But it's a fun event. We had lots of people just really fascinated. Kids came out because, yeah, it's a cool part of the profession is watching big equipment and professionals climbing trees.
All right. Thanks very much for that reminder, and hope the day is good for you. Let's go to Nikki next in Dodgeville. Nikki, what's on your mind today?
Good morning.
Hi.
My husband and I saw your program at the State Fair, Melinda. It was the highlight of the fair for us.
Oh,
it was
thanks.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
You showed us some containers that you had plants in, and in one of the containers there was a little grass-like plant that kind of hung over the edge with a fluffy tail, like the fluffy part of a fountain grass.
Oh, yes. It was red?
Yes, it was red.
It's the chenille plant.
Chenille plant. Oh, and, wonderful.
And sometimes people grow it as a house plant. I'm seeing it more and more available at garden centers. And for those of us that remember chenille robes and chenille bedspreads, the flowers are kind of long. One gardener called it a monkey tail, but beautiful red, fluffy, very easy to grow. Looks great in containers alone or mixed with other plants. And then again, some people will grow it indoors in a bright, sunny window as a house plant.
Well, I think we're going to try and see if we can find it, Melinda, because we both just really fell in love with it.
Well, you know, and I'm glad you asked. And one of the things, I always have good intentions, and probably in 2 weeks I'll post all the plants that were in the containers. We didn't bring a listing of them at the fair, so for anybody else that saw some other things and can't get through today, check my website in about a week. We'll post kind of what was in the planters.
Thank you very
much. All right,
much.
Nikki, thank you very much. Our guest today is Melinda Myers. She is the host of the PBS television show Great Lakes Gardener and the author of many books about gardening in Wisconsin, including Month by Month Gardening in Wisconsin. That's from Cool Springs Press. I'm Jim Packard. Sarah Carroll is our on-air producer today, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Jim Packard, sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio on Garden Talk with Mel Myers of Milwaukee. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number for you, if you're in Madison, is 263-1890. Otherwise, toll-free, 800-642-1234. And Mel, let's go back to the phones to Pat in La Crescent, and I assume that's Minnesota. Hi, Pat.
Hi, good morning, and thank you so much for your program. Mm-hmm. I have always, in the fall, divided the daylilies.
I guess we lost Mel Myers. Why don't you try to get her back? And I think we also lost Pat as well. So let's see what's on Emily's mind in Racine. Hi, Emily.
Hi, how are you? Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yes.
I came in late, and I heard the end of what Melinda had to say about a hydrangea. I got a hydrangea. My husband passed away, and I got it from my college friends. And, you know, the plant is just huge. And I have one tiny little bud, and I'm wondering what I can do to make it bloom, please.
Well, we're attempting to get Mel back so that she can give you an answer to that. I don't have an answer for you myself, but it does seem as if you've got too much growth and not enough flower.
Exactly, and I want to know the plant's beautiful, just no flowers. And I also got a hibiscus for Mother's Day, and in the directions it mentions, don't let it get dry. Well, I always, you know, kind of put my finger in the plant, and if it's, you know, dry, I water it. Well, I tell you, I don't know whether I'm watering it too much, not enough. It was covered with blossoms, but the leaves are beginning to get yellow and drop, and I figure that's too much moisture. So I'm wondering what Dr. Melinda has to say.
What do we know about Mel? She called us, correct? So she has to call us back in order to. I think we have her now. I think she'll be with us in just a second, so stay with us,
okay.
Emily. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Hold on just a second here.
Thank you.
All right, Mel is back with us. Mel, hi. Oh, guess not. Now she is. All right.
Oh, sorry about that.
Did you cut yourself off?
Yes, I did.
Okay. At least you owned up to it.
I did. What can I say?
And Emily is on the line from Racine, and Emily's got a hydrangea plant that's huge, but it just has one blossom. Is that right, Emily?
Yes, and it's just kind of a bud. It's even, you know, just a bud.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what kind of hydrangea it is?
Oh, boy. No.
Is it supposed to have pink or blue flowers
pink?
Okay.
Because I have a white one that's absolutely covered.
Right. One of the problems with the ones that are either pink, which they're pink and alkaline or high pH
uh-huh.
soils, blue and acid soils, the older ones, like the Nikko Blue, bloom on old wood. So what happens often here in Wisconsin is they die back to the ground, then they grow, produce leaves, and we don't get many flowers. Endless Summer, which was the one we thought was going to be the big rage, blooms on old and new wood. Now, last year, a lot of people throughout the Great Lakes region really didn't see good flowering. This year, I'm seeing really late blooming on Endless Summer. A lot of them died back because of the cold snap we had in January and lack of snow, put on lots of new growth. But again, what I'm seeing is with the cooler temperatures, for many of us, they're just starting to bud up and bloom now. Avoid high nitrogen fertilizer. That's one thing. How much light is it getting?
Pretty much.
Like a half a day, maybe?
Oh, easily.
Oh, okay, then that's fine. It's growing fine, no wilting, looking like it's...
No, it's an absolutely beautiful plant.
Okay, which is very even more frustrating. If it was suffering, you would know. So if it's one of the older ones, you're lucky to get any blooms. And if it's the Endless Summer, we're just seeing a lot of issues with that right now. What I would do is we typically have high to excessive levels of phosphorus in our soil, so unless you had a soil test and found that that is an issue and it's lacking, I wouldn't do a blossom booster. If you feel, you know, it's a good healthy plant, so it probably doesn't need much fertilizer, if any, so you may want to cut back if you've been doing a lot of fertilizing. Sometimes that promotes leaf growth and interferes with flowering. So I'd kind of check what you're doing fertilizer-wise. Sounds like it's a good, healthy plant in the right growing conditions. And I know that you're doing everything right, and that's one of the frustrations. Now, the other thing is, how long have you had this plant again?
It's 3 years old this year.
Did it bloom for you last year?
Well, not much.
Okay.
And then somebody I was taking care of my lawn, I think put too much, maybe that was phosphorus.
Okay.
Because it had one or two blossoms last year, but the plant was huge, and so I thought he was accidentally spraying it when he did, you know,
the lawn.
Fertilizing on the lawn.
Yeah.
But now this year I haven't had anybody, and all I've done is put on, I think it's an acid of some sort that Milliger's told me about.
Right, like an aluminum sulfate.
A cupful in a gallon of water.
Yeah, and it phosphorus promotes flowering, and so often people use blossom boosters, but make sure you need it, and typically we don't. High nitrogen fertilizers, which are typically used on the lawn, could interfere. But the other thing I often see with young plantings of shrubs, they're forced into bloom, so when we buy them, they bloom great that first year. The next year, they're putting down roots, which is really what we want them to do. Unfortunately, often they put a lot of energy into root development, less into flowering, and it can't even take a couple years till it makes that switch back. So what I would do is, if your plants in the area are blooming fine, you probably have the right nutrient mix, and then I would just proper care, you know, avoid too much. It sounds like you're just doing the aluminum sulfate, so that should be fine. And unfortunately, I think it's going to be patience that's going to make the difference.
Now, how often should that fertilizer be put on?
Well, the aluminum sulfate you only do if you're trying to keep the blooms blue instead of pink. And some gardeners decide, you know what, I'm just going to live with the pink, and then they don't do any of the aluminum sulfate.
Yeah, frankly, I think I really do like the white better.
The white ones are white no matter what you do.
Uh-huh. And they're just blooming. I've got about at least 10.
Yeah, and you're right. They're a lot easier and a lot less hassle. They bloom on new growth.
I'm just even watering them. I'm not even putting anything on it. It's just going crazy.
I know. It's one of those things that I think a lot of us always wanted something we couldn't have, which were the blue and the pink hydrangeas.
Mm-hmm.
Made us all kind of get kind of crazy about them.
And Emily, you also had a question about a hibiscus. What is that?
Oh, yeah. Now, I have a hibiscus I got for Mother's Day, and in the directions it said, you know, don't let it get dry. So, you know, and I always thought, my rule of thumb is, you know, you put your finger in, and if it's dry, it needs watering.
Right.
Well, I've tried both ways, and it has had a lot of blooms. You're right about coming from the greenhouse. But slowly now, it's beginning to get yellow leaves. So I wondered, am I not rotting it enough, or is it too much?
This is in a pot, I take
this
it. Is it inside or outside?
Outside, in the sun.
In the sun.
Could it get too much sun?
Well, no, it's probably adjusted fine. Basically, with outdoor containers, usually we're watering them once a day.
Okay.
So you may need it. That's one issue. And then because we're watering them once a day, now sometimes you can sneak by with every other day depending on the potting mix, how big the container is. But if it's in full sun and you're getting a lot of yellow, I'd check it every day. The other thing you need to be aware of is with containers, because we water them every day, most of them are in soilless mixes, we do need to do more fertilization. So either putting a slow-release fertilizer on the soil surface or something like an Osmocote, Milorganite, something like that, where every time you water, you release fertilizer, is a good way to fertilize without a lot of work. Now, I would do that now if you haven't fertilized at all, because it's in a container and because you're going to bring it in for winter, we're not worrying about promoting late-season growth. So adjust your watering.
Mm-hmm.
If it still continues to yellow and you haven't been fertilizing, you may want to do, you could even do a quick release fertilizer, hit it once now, and then maybe once one more time before you bring it in the fall.
Good luck to you, Emily. Thanks very much for your call. And let's go to Pat in La Crescent, Minnesota. I think we cut you off in mid-sentence there.
Yeah. Sorry about that, Pat, if that was my fault.
Oh, that's okay. I started to ask you about daylilies. I have always divided them in the fall. This year I have so many, and I want to start some new gardens. Can I divide them as soon as they finish blooming, or must I wait?
You bet. You can do them late August, early September is a great time. We've had a perfect summer for the most part, not extremely hot, so it's a great time. You could even cheat a little bit. You know, late August, early September is kind of when we feel like the worst of the hot, dry weather is over. It's easier on the plants, easier on us.
But I think gardeners out there know that you often divide when you need to or have to. So, yeah, you can get by. You know, the benefit of waiting till they're done blooming is you get to enjoy the bloom. I cut the seed pods off. So after you dig and divide, the energy goes back into the roots so they get reestablished as quickly as possible.
Oh, wonderful. Then my other question is, I got seeds a couple of years ago for, I think they call them Asclepias butterfly weed or milkweed.
Right.
They're the pink ones. And they are blooming this year for the first time, but they're so tall. They're out of proportion for where I have them. And I wondered if I could pinch them early, as I do chrysanthemums.
You know,
to keep them short.
You know, that's a great idea. It's worth a try. You have nothing to lose. I would do it early in the season since they bloom a bit earlier than your chrysanthemums.
Mm-hmm.
So early June, it would be worth a try.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great idea. It sounds like the common milkweed, which has big flowers, wonderful fragrance, big leaves on them.
Well, actually, these are
very
more like the butterfly weed with slightly more strappy leaves.
Okay, then that's probably the swamp milkweed, which is a wonderful addition to the perennial garden.
Yeah.
I'm honestly not sure, but it won't hurt anything. So give them a cut back in early June, though. I would do it in early June, and it might give you a break. The other thing is, and we all make these mistakes, I have a few plants that are in the wrong place, too, a little taller than I thought. So the other thing you may want to do is watch and see that maybe it might be easier just to move them someplace in spring where the height is more appropriate and then you don't have to bother with them at all.
I thought of that, and I suppose it should be in a rather moist area. Is that right? They're doing fine in a very well-drained patch.
You know what's really amazing about swamp milkweed? It's used often in rain gardens because it's very tolerant of wet, but it's also very tolerant of dry, which seems kind of hard to believe. And so I've seen it used not only in rain gardens, regular gardens, and like you said, in areas with good drainage. It's wonderful. It's a little more refined looking than a lot of the milkweeds. I find it more reliable than butterfly weed, which I find just kind of plants itself wherever it wants to go, which is fine. It's beautiful. And it's not doesn't seed around as readily as some of the others. So, yeah, it's a wonderful plant. Like you said, it'll take both damp soils and well-drained soils.
And it does attract butterflies.
Oh, doesn't it, though? And it's a nice addition, I think, to the perennial garden.
All right, Pat, good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call. And let's go next to Susan in Wausau. Hi, Susan.
Yes, I just want to bother you with a couple questions. We have a beautiful maple tree that is probably, oh my gosh, maybe 15 years old, and everyone compliments us on it. But this summer especially, we are losing fresh leaves all the time. And the tree looks healthy, but these big leaves are falling down with every wind, and we're just concerned. We are going to have someone come over from our service in Wausau, but they don't have an arborist with them. And I'm wondering, what else can we do if they don't really have an idea of what's going on with this tree?
Is it just the leaf or a leaf and a twig?
Just the leaves.
Okay. There's an insect called a maple petiole borer, and it's an insect that burrows. It lays its eggs, and the worm-like critter burrows through the stem, the leaf stem. And it's called a maple petiole borer. And so when you look at it, petiole borer, B-O-R-E-R. And petiole, like the leaf stem name, petiole borer. And if you Google it, this is one thing, if you do a search, I should say, on the Internet, what's cool is you can look and get pictures and go, oh, yeah, that looks just like what I'm seeing. But it doesn't hurt the plant, but it's very disheartening because you get these beautiful, big, healthy leaves that look fine. If the leaves look fine and they're green and full size or, you know, and
that's
dropping
what
to
they
the,
are.
Then it's maybe the petiole borer. And what you can tell is, instead of looking like it fell off like a fall leaf, you know, where the attachment is missing, it's usually a pinched part on the stem or a sunken part on the stem where the petiole borer was feeding. What happens is they do their feeding, and then a wind comes along and the leaves drop. No reason to treat because the damage is done, and treating would make you feel better, but it wouldn't help the problem. Not usually a problem every year. Their timing varies from year to year, so it's really not something we can say, okay, you need to spray now. And it's not harmful if your tree is good and healthy.
So the good news is it sounds like maple petiole borer, and it sounds like it's not something that's an issue to the health and the vigor and the longevity of the tree.
Okay.
So from your description, the good news, it sounds like maple petiole borer.
That sounds good. I have another quick question.
Sure.
Or two. We have new hydrangeas planted. Did you say you cut them down every year or just...
If they are white hydrangeas, the white ones like Annabelle, Hills of Snow, bloom on new growth. And so those, I like to leave them stand for winter because I like the winter interest. Okay. Also, leaving them stand increases hardiness. Probably important the first couple years of their life. Then you cut those back in the spring because usually they come from new growth at the base, but they get floppy if you don't. The pink and the blue hydrangeas typically bloom on old wood. They're not as reliably hardy, so I like to leave those stand. And if it is one of the old forms that blooms on old wood, you increase your chance of flowers. And I do some mulching for extra insulation. Endless summer, I'd leave them stand even though they bloom on new wood, because if some wood survives, they'll put an early flush of flower from that. If they are panicled hydrangeas, the ones that have the white flowers that kind of turn pink and then brown for the winter and they're kind of cone-shaped, those you can leave stand. They form a more woody base and need a lot less pruning than your rounded snowball-type hydrangeas.
These are new plants. Do you suggest fertilizing just maybe every 3 weeks with just like a green grow or something around all your plants and new plants? Is that too much?
Research has shown, especially with trees and shrubs, that really you're better to let the plants get established the first year and then do your fertilization.
Okay.
I'm a big fan on low-nitrogen, slow-release fertilizers because I think if we enter a droughty period, and you can't, less likely to burn. I think it's less likely to overdo.
Nice to know.
Early in the plant's life, we're trying to get roots established, not so much promote top growth. So a low-nitrogen, slow release doesn't really push top growth at the expense of root development. So that's why my bias is put them in the ground. Most of us have pretty rich soils. If we're fertilizing other plants, annuals and things in the area, they're probably getting, our soils are pretty rich. Give them a year and then do your fertilization.
Okay. And one more question, and let you go. We have new choke cherry bushes, too.
Okay.
They seem kind of lanky to me. Is that the look they have?
Especially when they're getting established. I think a lot of times with choke cherries, early in their life, they can look a little lanky. Like service berries, they take a couple years to get established, and then they really take off and fill in. So, again, if you fertilized already, stop. Definitely stop fertilizing trees and shrubs and perennials in ground at this point. If you feel it needs a little nudge, then spring next year, again, consider a low-nitrogen, slow-release. But after about 2 or 3 years, they'll be established and fill in and just take off like crazy.
Susan, thank you very much for your call. Appreciate hearing from you. The number for you to join the conversation with Mel Myers is 263-1890 if you're in Madison, or toll-free at 800-642-1234. And we accept emails, talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Mary in Richfield next. And Mary, what's on your mind today?
Hello, nice talking to you.
Mm-hmm. Nice to talk to you, Mary. Thanks for calling.
I have a question about Wagila. I have a Wagila bush that's about 10 years old now. It's about 5 feet tall, and it blooms beautifully. It's the scarlet flowers or rose-colored flowers.
Excellent.
But I'm wondering, like lilac bushes, would it be good? It's so thick, and I don't want it to get real tall. Would it be good to go in and cut out one or two of the older branches in the center?
That's exactly what you want to do. That's a great way to do it. Now, Wagilas bloom on old and new growth because you're probably getting some sporadic flowers throughout the summer and into fall, and their biggest flush is on older stems. So you have two choices. Some people will say, you know what, I'm going to take one or two stems back to ground level, and I'll sacrifice the bloom on those two stems. Opens it up. It controls the height. You'll still get the big flush. Others go, I want as many flowers as possible. So after the first flush of bloom, they'll go in, take out a few of the bigger stems, and if need be, reduce the height of the plant, taking longer branches back to shorter side branches. But if you get in the habit of removing one or two older stems every year or every other year, you really help control the height as well as keeping it nice and open for better airflow, light penetration, and to keep it blooming like it sounds like yours is doing great.
Oh, okay, great. That's excellent. Can I ask one more question since we're on hydrangeas? When you're talking slow-release fertilizer, Milorganite, is that...
Well, that's one of your choices, right? You know, I'm a little biased on that, but it's a nice low-nitrogen slow-release, an organic source of nitrogen as well. There are some other forms available, whether they're sulfur-coated or things like Osmocote as well. You know, I'm a fan of the organic source of nitrogen, and Milorganite slow-release has some iron and has phosphorus that they found, which is interesting. Doesn't leach through the soil, is available to the plant, so it doesn't help contribute to the buildup, and so you get some of the benefit of phosphorus that we're not getting from the phosphorus that's in the soil already, so it's kind of an added benefit.
Okay, well, I was reading that, you know, I've got a Nico Blue, and it hasn't been blooming.
Right.
So, and I've been putting aluminum sulfate on it, and I was reading that the phosphorus binds up the aluminum sulfate.
Exactly, and that's one of the soil that's in the soil, and that's why we don't want to do additional phosphorus. This form of phosphorus, they're just finding it's really interesting. What's being bound is to the soil. So I haven't seen an interference using this form, but you're right, you don't want to do the blossom boosters while you're trying to turn them blue because you're kind of tying things up and you're counterproductive in that whole process. So I would avoid those blossom boosters, which are a little quicker release, and we're not finding as it's an interesting science, and they're not sure how it's reacting in the soil. So we're going to be finding, I hope, more out in the next few years about what's unique about that source of phosphorus and Milorganite.
All right, Mary, good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call. We got an email from Courtney in Oshkosh who wondered when she should plant new lilac bushes.
You know, one of the good things is, you know, we were talking earlier about getting shrubs. A lot of the garden centers and nurseries throughout Wisconsin, I know I've got a lot of listeners in Minnesota and Illinois and Michigan as well, are providing good quality nursery plants. Throughout the growing season and into fall. Lilacs, you know, spring bloomers, we'd like to get them in the spring, but you know what? If you get them in early fall, get them established, it's a great time to plant. A lot of good quality materials out there now. I like to do a lot of planting late August, early September. I tend to have a little more time. The soil's nice and warm. The plants tend to root. The air's cooler, so they don't dry out as quickly. So it's a little less watering on our end. So you could do that now if you can find some good quality stock in your neighborhood. It'd be great.
And an email from Steve in Milwaukee. Recently, we saw you in a great public television interview with Lori Otto, the Queen of the Wild Ones.
Yes.
The discussion of natural landscaping to replace unnatural lawns was very informative. Please suggest a few ground cover and shrub selections for someone with limited time and even less gardening knowledge. The area is highly shaded and a relatively moist urban Milwaukee location. Ideally, would like something 4 to 8 inches tall. I would think that that would be the ground cover. And shrubs 3 to 4 feet tall, plants that are hardy and easy to grow. And let me let you think about that through the break. And when we come back, why, I will ask you for a couple of suggestions.
Great.
Okay. Our guest is Mel Myers of Milwaukee, the host of the public television show Great Lakes Gardener, our guest on Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you along for Garden Talk today. And as we went into the break, we asked Mel Myers for some suggestions for ground cover and shrub selections. Anything come to mind, Mel?
Yeah, there's a lot of good things. If we want to stay native, one of my favorite ground covers, a native plant, is Canadian ginger. Wonderful plant. It's not evergreen, but it grows to be about 6 inches tall, green kidney-shaped leaves, fills in pretty quickly, and the flowers are kind of a reddish-brown, lay on the ground, so it's not something that you're going to go, wow, it's got great flowers. You have to kind of pick up the leaves to see, but it's a fun one for kids and of all ages because beetles and we think maybe slugs do the pollinating, and it grows and fills in pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of native sedges that will also take shade and do very well and give you a grass-like appearance. There's one that, if for those that visited State Fair, we used in the rain garden, which is a palm sedge, Muscinginensis, which is beautiful. Takes full sun, takes some shade as well. Gets a little taller, though, but Pennsylvanica sage is probably about 8 inches tall. If you don't mind going with some non-natives, a plant called dead nettle, Lamium, is a great ground cover for shade, and often dry shade under Norway maples, if that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
Coral bells, heuchera, there is a native one that has green flowers, but a lot of the cultivated types have beautiful foliage, nice flowers, and will tolerate shade and do quite well. Brunnera or Brunera, depending on your pronunciation, heart-shaped leaves. I like the variegated ones because they brighten up the shade. And beautiful blue forget-me-not-like flowers. Those are some good ground cover. And ferns, of course, native as well as some of the domestic ferns, make a nice ground cover for shade areas. So that's some ideas for there. Then when we get to the shrubs, finding things that tolerate shade, of course, the hydrangeas, a favorite because they are very shade tolerant, maybe a bit taller than you're looking for. Another plant that's becoming more and more available, and they're doing some work on it, is one called snowberry. And a lot of you may remember it. I remember, I think, of my grandma because they are little white snowball-like fruit that as kids we'd always throw on the sidewalk and make them pop. But those are great shade plants, and they're doing some hybridizing, and there's some nice with some nice ones with some pink tinge, and they'll take dry shade as well as full sun. Black jet bead is another one, rhodotyphus, that is, you don't see used a lot, but it's a nice one for shady areas. White flowers, it's in the rose family, so it's got some nice white flowers, and it has fruit that looks like little black berries. That's really a nice one. And if you ever get to Berner Botanical Gardens, the gardens at Whitnall Park in Milwaukee County, they have a nice planting of rhodotyphus with hostas, which, of course, favorite shade plant,
right,
growing under an oak tree in the shade.
Well, those are some great suggestions. Steve, you should have your hands full and give us a report back next season and tell us how things turned out.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what he decides on.
All right, let's go back to the phones. The number for you in Madison is 263-1890 or toll-free at 800-642-1234. Todd is next in Bondiwell. Hi, Todd.
Good morning.
Good morning, Todd.
My question's on, I have a lot of green ash trees on my property, and I've been losing between one and two a year for probably 2-3 years now. And what's happening is as soon as they go into winter, I mean, they're fully leaved, and by spring, the bark's falling off them, and there's no more growth coming out of them. I pulled off some bark, and what I'm finding is a little half-inch-long caterpillars underneath the bark.
Okay. You want to check for borers, and there's two different kinds. There's the native clearwing borer that attacks stressed ashes, okay, and those have been a problem for years, and the solution is keeping the ash in good health. So it could have been the old practice with ash trees was planting them deep, so which was a practice with all trees 20, 30 years ago. So we didn't have the roots coming to the surface. And then we're finding that a lot of trees rot because the trunk is below ground, should be above ground. There are some other diseases that hit ashes, yellows, verticillium wilt. There's an ash decline that we're not really sure what happens, but the leaves are smaller. Ash plant bugs don't kill it but can weaken it and stress it. Emerald ash borer can also cause some of the symptoms. You know, you'd have a little larva inside, and you end up with these kind of trails are serpentine, where the regular borer, the traditional borer, is more like a fishbone where you have a main line and then some side shoots going off. What I would recommend, do you have access to the Internet?
Yes, I do.
You might want to go on. There's a couple of good sites that have great pictures. There's one which is for Wisconsin, and it's called www.emeraldashborer.wi.gov/. And they've got a picture of the galleries that kind of going through, and also have some good links for you to find other pictures as well. There's also a good one out of Ohio that I think I was looking for the website there, but if you just Google emerald ash borer, you're going to find a lot of good photos, and that will help you differentiate between the regular borer and the emerald ash borer. If you think you've got an emerald ash borer, I'd call the Department of Natural Resources in your area and just let them know, because we're trying to find and locate. But those photos are excellent because it'll help you differentiate between the two. If your tree's been struggling for a while,
I hate to hear you have a bore, the regular one, but let's hope it's that one. Keeping your tree in good health, you may want to get a certified arborist out. One, they can double-check the type of the bore. But if it is salvageable, give you a recommendation for maybe mulching the area, you know, doing some treatments like that. Or if it's not salvageable, to get it out of there, to get rid of the problem, so your other surrounding ashes, that you can focus your energy on keeping those healthy.
I have one right now that's pretty much completely dead. Should I cut it out, or should I wait and have someone look at it before I cut it out?
You know, it wouldn't hurt if you can get someone to look at it, especially if you have other ash trees in the area. They can take a look at it and make sure what's going on, and then also help you dispose of it. If you've got bore problems, no matter which one, you're going to want to contain the firewood. You're not going to want those to escape and reinfect trees. So, you know, with our concern right now, if you're willing to bring someone in, I think it would be worth your time and whatever cost it would be to have someone evaluate it and then get it out for you.
Well, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
All right, Todd,
call.
Good luck to you. Thanks very much for your call. And we go to next to Beth in La Crosse. Beth, what's on your mind today?
Hello.
Hi, Beth.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
It's gorgeous out today.
Yes.
Oh, isn't it a great day to be in the garden?
Yeah, it is. I live in a condominium, but we're allowed to do our own plantings and et cetera, and I have a beautiful sunroom that faces east on water. It is the Black River, but it is a bay, so it's a cove.
Okay.
And I have some very ugly bushes that are very old. I'd like to tear those out and till up the soil and plant all rose bushes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that would be the best area, how they would do, et cetera.
Yeah, do you get full sun? Is it unobstructed east, so you get morning sun if it's 6 hours?
It's not totally unobstructed, but I am thinking of trimming back some trees.
Okay.
There.
Because for roses, you want at least a good 6 hours of direct sun for best results. An east location is really perfect because the sun dries off the leaves if it's rained at night, reducing disease problems. Do you know what shrubs are growing there now?
No, they just remind me of something that reminds me of a mum leaf is how it looks.
Okay, I wonder if they're potentilla. Do they get yellow flowers or white flowers
nothing.
In the summer?
Nothing. No.
Okay, nothing. No. Okay. Okay. The reason I'm asking is sometimes if you know what does well, you know how far you can push it. Usually the shrub roses with fewer petals are a little more shade tolerant than those with more petals. It's kind of a generalization. All the shrub roses these days, not all of them, but many of them are good hardy plants, good disease resistance. I don't know how patient you are, if you're willing to try a couple and then add to the collection and see how they do in the existing sunlight. Having an arborist come in and thin out the canopy so you get better light penetration is also a good idea, and that's another way to increase that light and see how it does. I would look for some hardy shrub roses, though, with good disease resistance. The flower carpet series is a nice one that it's done pretty well in zones, you know, 4 as well as 5, a little less than 3, you're in a 4. The knockout rose, some dieback we've seen lately. I know people growing them in zone 4 often just, you know they're going to have dieback and just have the roots come out. Double knockout's a little bit hardier. I like the fairy. Again, you know, if you can get 6 hours of direct light, you're in great shape. Less than that, it's going to be kind of check it and see what works for you.
Okay. Is there anything particular should we do? I used to have rose gardens in other areas that I've lived,
mm-hmm.
and they're all different kinds. David Austin, I have to say, is one of my favorites.
Wonderful.
Like the old-fashioned roses.
Right, and the old-fashioned, and those would do well, too. You know, the David Austin, there's a much expanded, you know, palette of those as well. And so, yeah, I would say just look for, pick one you like, because most of those and the shrub roses are good and hardy, don't need the winter protection. I'm guessing you're going to be looking at that view in winter. So you really want to look at either the rose hips on the plants, you know, the coarse texture of the roses versus rose cones or mounds of soil and evergreen boughs.
Yeah, I never liked rose cones.
I don't either. They're misused anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I have to tell you something about hydrangeas because I'm laughing because all these calls are coming in. I used to live in Washington State.
Oh.
That is a state of hydrangeas.
Oh. Could you tell that? Yeah, you lucky dog. Good for you, and I'm sorry you
just left a lot of nice plants behind, didn't you?
Yes. Well, I have to tell you, I bought some hydrangeas last year, put them in the front, which faces west, and my husband, who never, ever, ever touches the yard, ever, absolutely hates doing yard work, thought he'd do me a big favor this spring and went out and cut them all down to about within 6 inches of the ground.
Oh, no.
They have come back, but I was just in shock.
Oh, man. Thank you, dear.
So, thanks for sharing that, Beth. We appreciate hearing from you.
And good luck with your new planting.
Indeed. And we will continue to take your calls and talk with Mel Myers of Milwaukee about your gardening questions. She is the host of the PBS television show Great Lakes Gardener, taught horticulture at Milwaukee Area Technical College for several years, the author of many gardening books, including Can't Miss Small Space Gardening, Month by Month Gardening in Wisconsin, The Perfect Wisconsin Lawn, and The Garden Book for Wisconsin. They are all from Cool Springs Press. You can read more about Mel's thoughts on gardening at melindamyers.com, MelindaMyers.com. I'm Jim Packard, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Packard, in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you along with us for another edition of Garden Talk. Our guest today, Mel Myers of Milwaukee, host of the PBS television show Great Lakes Gardener. She's on the phone with us. And if you'd like to join the conversation with her, the number in Madison is 263-1890 or toll free at 800-642-1234. And I know, Mel, that we've had several people call, and they couldn't write fast enough to get that list of native plants that you gave to the Milwaukee caller. Would you be able to put that kind of a list on your website?
I definitely will. And some of the plants I gave were native and some weren't, so I will be sure to put a list of good shade-tolerant plants. Give me till Monday, mm-hmm. And if I don't, report me to Jim, okay?
All right.
But I'll post that on my website. We'll put it under Learn from Melinda, and we'll put up a page right there, short term, and I'll put down some good shade plants, and I'll note which ones are native and which ones aren't.
So when people go to Melinda Myers Growing Among Friends, they will find pictures of you, pictures of flowers and trees, garden tips for late July. I think
we're working
that
on
be
late
August
the day
okay.
after I hang up.
Okay.
The fair
so
got
on
in the
Monday,
way.
You're going to find a whole bright, brand new MelindaMyers.com website.
Right. So, yeah, check it out. And we're doing some exciting things. We've got a green tip of the day now. So, every day, if you visit the site right at the top, we're mm-hmm. trying to give simple things that you can do to be kind to the environment and keep your landscape looking good. So,
all right.
And then coming this fall, we'll have some ways of getting more information more easily. So as soon as those, when it happens, I'll let you know. I hate to speak of it before it's done because, you know, websites mm-hmm. take longer than you think.
We had an email from Joanne who cut down a 50-year-old oak tree which stood at the end of a row of lilacs. I would like to continue the row of lilacs. When can I plant? How close to the hole can I plant?
Great question. Now, if you had the stump ground out, usually, you know, they do a good job of trying to take as much of the debris out, but you end up with a lot of wood in with that soil. And what happens is it temporarily ties up the nitrogen. As the microorganisms break down that the wood debris, they temporarily use the nitrogen from the soil. So if you put a new plant in right away, you often get nitrogen deficiency. Now, what you may want to do is throw in, again, a low-nitrogen fertilizer, something that's going to feed the microorganisms, speed up that decomposition, and do your planting, you know, maybe wait a year so that you have less of a problem. If you've got most of the stump grindings out, a lot of people will go ahead and plant, and then, you know, kind of breaks my rule of not fertilizing at planting. But again, if you used a low-nitrogen, slow-release fertilizer, you won't damage the roots of the shrub, but you may need to do a little supplemental fertilizing short-term. But if you can wait a year, you'll be better off. If you didn't have the stump ground out, you know, it can take several years for that stump to decompose, whether you use some of the products where you drill holes in and pour them down and it kind of eats away at the stump and the major roots. Some gardeners will bury the stump with soil to speed up decomposition, but that can take several years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you had the stump ground out, if you can wait a year, that's going to give you an edge. If you can't, you know, you may want to just put some fertilizer in there right now, work it in with the soil, feed those microorganisms, and plant in the spring.
And you will be in the Fox Valley tomorrow at the Wisconsin Arborist Festival. What's going on there?
You bet. It's in Pierce Park in Appleton at the 1100 block of West Prospect Street, and it's an exciting day. I'll be speaking from 10:30 to 12:30 talking about tree death by good intentions, things that we do that we often think are good for the tree that aren't, but also giving proper care and advice. The fun part, I think, is to come and see the arborist in action. It's a competition. The winner will then compete nationally at next year's International Society of Arboriculture. So it's a great chance to see professionals do a work climb, watch them do a speed climb, do a rescue. It's a way that with our competition, not only we are selecting a champion, but showing off the skills of good qualified arborists. Last year, as you mentioned, we were in Madison, and it was great seeing families come out and see the arborist at work. So there's a lot happening. You can see professionals. Kids of all ages love the big equipment, the high lifts, love to watch the arborist in action. And it's really a way to talk about tree health, tree care, and then see professionals at work. So it's a fun day. It's free. There's no charge. Come and visit. If you have one of my books, I'd love to sign it. We'll have a few books available as well. I have kids' activities books we're giving out, lots of information, lots of fun. It's a good day for me, even though I'm working in the morning. I usually hang around and watch the activities in the afternoon, so I'll be around to answer questions for a good part of the day.
All right. That's Mel Myers, and we go to Al in St. Germain next. Hello, Al. Thanks for waiting.
Yes, thank you very much for taking my call. I have a general question that I've been very curious about over the years. As you drive through, like, forests and woods and so forth, and this also happened to me on my property, pine trees, I'm generally speaking about, spruce, white pine, this can happen to red pine, a tree in the middle of the woods, and one on my property just died. It's maybe, the tree on my property was 20, 25 years old, beautifully shaped, it got sun. Nothing changed as far as the environment or salt next to the road or anything. And I even draw water out of the lake and kind of generally water my property so in dry spells so that the trees get at least some water once a week when it is dry. I wonder if there's any science or if it ever has been determined why just one tree in the woods, maybe it's 5, 10, 15, 20 years old, the needles will turn brown and it dies and you can break the branches. They're so dry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. And I sometimes when you hear the word decline tagged on to a tree problem, it's often describing the symptoms and we don't know the cause yet. So we call it decline. Sometimes it's a complex of diseases that cause that decline. It's kind of like why in a family one person always gets sick and the rest stay healthy. Sometimes it can be something attacked it. There are insects that fly in, that move in. Sometimes the tree has a nick or damage from an animal, from a human activity that opens up a wound and allows a disease or insect to come in. Sometimes there's, you know, sometimes at planting, there's something that's happened. You know, you're right. You always look at, did we change the grade? Have we done anything that could affect the roots? Because half of the tree is underground, and the majority of the feeder roots are in the top 12 inches, and they go 2 to 5 times the height of the tree away from the trunk. So there's lots of opportunity for us to impact that tree without realizing it. So no, there's never been one thing that, okay, this is why you'll find one tree in the middle of the woods dying. It might have been the weaker and the others outcompeted for water and nutrients, may have been a little more shaded, it could have been a little weakened state, and that something moved in and finished it off. And I know it's frustrating because it sounds like you did everything right for your tree, and it died anyway. And again, there are some borers that will hit, and some other problems that can move in, often secondary, that for some reason that plant is declining. So I guess that's a long way of saying no, not as far as I know that there's any one thing that causes that one tree to die in the middle of the forest.
And if he is really interested in that one tree, he can take a sample of that to his county extension office, and they'll be able to determine what was the cause of death.
Yes, and that's a great point, Jim. You want to, if you, before you replace a tree, and especially if it seems like it was doing great and then all of a sudden dies, it's a good idea to find out what killed it, because many times it is an insect or disease. They can identify it for you, and that way you won't replace it with a tree that's also susceptible. So good point. I'm glad you brought that up. And check with your extension office. It varies from office to office how they handle plant samples. Some have you send them directly into the diagnostic labs in Madison. There are some charges involved with disease diagnosis. Some will take care of it right there for you at their office.
Al, thanks so much, and good luck to you. Appreciate hearing from you. Pete and Franklin, let's give you a chance to go. Go ahead.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Pete. How can I help?
I've got an oak tree in my yard. I believe it's a bur oak.
Okay.
And the squirrels have helped plant new ones.
Okay.
But I need to transplant them because they're not where I'd like them to be.
Mm-hmm.
Last summer I transplanted 13 small, maybe 6-inch high start trees.
Right.
And only one survived.
Spring is a little bit better time to transplant. Oaks are notoriously difficult for transplanting because of their taproot. There are very few nurseries that carry oaks. They are out there and available, and they've mastered the whole technique of raising them and transplanting them so they're ready to go into our backyards. But you're right, small is better. So if you move them when they're small, and if you can do it in spring before growth begins, that's going to give you much better luck than trying to do it in the summer.
Okay.
And that, keeping your fingers crossed never hurts either.
And I have one other question. That same oak tree, I'm losing a lot of branches. Is it just getting old and it's time?
Are they big branches dying back, or are they tips of branches?
It's big branches.
Okay. And when are you typically, does it seem to be one branch and then later it'll be another? Or are there a lot of them going at one time?
It started maybe 2 years ago, and now it's just spreading to the whole tree.
Now, is your house a new construction, or is the house and the tree been, is the house been there a long time?
It's been there a long time.
Okay. The reason I ask, you know, there's a lot of building happening in Franklin and a lot of parts of the state, and when we have new homes built, we often see construction damage show up 5 years after the house is built. 5 to 10 years after construction, we can see the tree starting to decline and eventually die. But that sounds like that's not an issue for you. What I would do is bring in a certified arborist to do some cleanup of the deadwood. You will get some deadwood wood on oak trees. You do see that occasionally. The fact you're seeing a few and it seems to be getting worse, it might be worth seeing if there's anything happening with that tree. You know, less disturbance to the root area is great. If the grass won't grow and you don't want to do perennial ground covers, mulches are a great way to just kind of keep the mower and weed whips away from the trunk of the tree. Don't change the level of soil around oak trees. They're very sensitive to as little as an inch of soil over the root systems can damage that tree, cause decline over time. It could just be normal dieback, death of branches that may have been injured, may just be old and thinning out because of shade. But, you know, it would be worth getting someone in there, because if it's an old tree, you really want to keep it good and healthy for the long haul.
Okay.
All right.
Good luck with
good
that.
Good luck. Thanks very much. We appreciate your call. Lauren has been waiting a while in West Salem with a question that we may or may not be able to get an answer
okay.
on.
Okay.
Lauren, what is it?
Yeah. You said that you thought it was a moth.
Well,
oh, the hummingbird.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. There's a, and I was like, boy, Jim, you know, Phil keeps us all well informed. There's one called a hawk moth or a hummingbird moth.
That's what okay. he described the other day, Wednesday.
And it flutters really fast.
Uh-huh.
And it's a moth when it slows down, because it moves a little different than a hummingbird, but its wings go just as fast. And it's a moth that does nectar during the day on flowers. And the first time you think, you think it's a hummingbird,
uh-huh.
a little bit smaller.
And bigger than a bumblebee.
Yes, bigger than a bumblebee.
And it's got a yellow band over its belly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Okay.
So, good job, Jim. Hummingbird moth. They're fun to watch.
Oh, they're lovely to watch.
Aren't they great?
My husband thought it was moth, and I'm like, no, it's not.
Darn, sorry. I'm afraid he was right.
So if you go to the entomology page, if you Google or search on entomology, you'll come up with a picture of a hawk moth, and we think that that's what you saw.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Lauren,
well,
good luck.
Excellent. Enjoy, and thanks for waiting for the answer.
Now, we've got an email from Bonnie, and Bonnie is enjoying the show but has a couple of questions. A 5-year-old Forsythia meadowlark that doesn't bloom. It's never been pruned. It has a great shape. It's in full sun. Any suggestions for her?
Wow, and she's hit all the things she knew I was going to ask. Forsythia bloom on old wood, so we always prune them if need be right after flowering if we want to reduce their size and still get the flowers.
Mm-hmm.
Full sun for best results. They'll take a little light shade. Avoid high nitrogen fertilizer. And what may be happening is she has flowers growing around. If she's using, you know, one of those fertilizers that you add, you know, every 2 weeks to keep your flowers looking great, she may just be getting a little too much nitrogen for her Forsythia. If it hasn't been pruned, the other thing she may want to do is thin it out a bit. Better light penetration into the center of the plant. Now, removing a couple of the old stems right back to ground level is a good way to open it up so you get better light, better airflow, but better light penetration often encourages bloom. If you do that every few years, what you'll do with your Forsythia is keep the size down, keep the leaves from top to bottom, and keep it blooming. So she might want to do some pruning. Now, some people will take out a few branches in late winter, knowing they're sacrificing the bloom on those branches, but then you can bring them inside and force them to bloom inside. The rest of the plant will still flower. It's just you remove those two branches that potentially could have bloomed for you outside, mm-hmm. but force them inside to enjoy.
And Bonnie also has a Korean lilac, Miss Kim, with the perfect shape. Should it be renewal pruned after it blooms in spring?
If it's getting too tall and overgrown, again, taking back a few branches to the ground level. Miss Kim does get big over time, and so taking a few of the older stems back to the ground level, if you need to reduce the height for your benefit that isn't needed for the plant, but if you need to reduce the height, that's a good time to do it. By taking some of those stems back right to ground level, you encourage growth from the base, so you have leaves from ground level to the tip of the branches. So, yes.
All right, Bonnie, good luck to you, and let's go to Mary in West Bend next. Hello, Mary.
Hi, I just have some information about the community information session for the Emerald Ash Borer.
Excellent.
It's going to be Tuesday, this coming Tuesday, August 19th, from 5 to 9, out at Washington County Fair Park on Highway PV. It's right off of Highway 45.
And what town is that located? In what town is that located?
It'll be the town of Polk, which is Washington County.
Okay.
On Highway, I think it's on a pole. But anyway, the
it's
open
just
house
south of West Bend, right? Just right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the open house starts at 5 o'clock, but the presentations and questions and answers go from 6:30 until 8. And the DNR Extension, Department of Agriculture, Trade and Commerce Protection are going to be there as well, answering people's questions.
All
wonderful.
Right,
oh, thank you so much. That's perfect timing. Really appreciate that.
And that's next Tuesday, the 19th, from 5 until 9 o'clock, and at the Washington County Fair Park. So thanks very much for the information. Let's go next to Mary in Malone. Hello, Mary.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
In early June, I bought a bulb for a peony tree, and I was told to expect it to grow about 2 feet this summer and then next summer add another 2 feet and bloom. It's only about 2 inches tall. The leaves look very healthy and green, but it hasn't grown any more than 2 inches. And I'm wondering, could it be that it's not getting enough sun? I have it on the northeast side. It gets full sun until about 11. Then it's in shade till 2, and then it gets sun again in the afternoon after that.
Well, that should be plenty of sunlight for that. They'll take some shade. So you planted it, put 2 inches of new growth on this year, is that what you're saying? Or you planted the root system and the whole plant's only 2 inches tall?
I planted the root system and the whole plant is only 2 inches tall.
Is there any chance anything's munching on it or eating it?
I don't see any holes in the leaves. They look very green and healthy. But
and it doesn't look like anything's eating the stem or taking out. Okay. I would be patient, which is a hard thing to do. I find tree peonies can be a little more challenging than the herbaceous peonies, which are reliably hardy and that type of thing. What you may want to do this winter is surround it with a cylinder of hardware cloth, sink it several inches in the ground, and at least, you know, 4 feet tall. That'll keep animals from munching. Once the ground freezes, I'd put some evergreen boughs, straw, or marsh hay, just for added insulation. Most tree peonies are grafted on, not all, but many are grafted on to the roots of herbaceous peonies because those are hardier. So protecting, and so they're not as hardy, so protecting that top growth would be helpful. What's growing around it? Any other plants in that garden area?
Some irises and daylilies, but they're probably 8 to 10 inches away.
What was in that spot before you put the tree peony in? Anything?
There was an evergreen, but I don't, not a tree, just an evergreen bush. I don't know what kind, though.
It's been out for a while, or is it?
Been out for about a year.
Okay. Okay, so you didn't have a lot of debris, wood debris in there left in the soil?
No, there was no.
Okay, what I would suggest, and tree peonies are very sensitive to competition, but it sounds like you don't have anything, trees or shrubs growing nearby that are fighting for water and nutrients. I would make sure that it's properly watered through the end of this year. Next spring, if you haven't fertilized again, I always start with a low nitrogen fertilizer, and that's because it's hard to go wrong with that. You can always add more versus a quick release because you want to nudge it along, but you don't want to get a lot of top growth at the expense of roots. So if you didn't fertilize this year, you may want to next spring before growth begins, just give it a little nudge with fertilizer. If it still seems to be sitting, you may want to use a very dilute solution of a quick-release fertilizer, you know, like a transplant solution. Usually they label it like that on the container just to see if that gives it a nudge. You know, sometimes the first year those plants just sit. I mean, that's sitting a little more than you'd like it to. And if you planted it early, it was pretty cool and pretty damp early in the season. So I would just keep proper watering, keep giving it TLC, protect it for the winter, and then if you need to give it a nudge in spring, if you feel like you haven't fertilized a low nitrogen slow release, see if that little nudge helps get it on its way.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, good luck with that.
Okay, thank you. And in an email from Arthur, he planted a bare root apple tree this spring. A rabbit recently chewed some of the bark. Should he replace the tree, or should he be patient as you've been advising others?
I know, patience is kind of the hardest tool we gardeners have to use. If the rabbits ate all the way around the trunk of the tree, if the leaves are still growing and out and not drying up and dying, there's enough of the cambium left that it's going through and pulling up water and nutrients, and the tree will be okay. If the rabbits ate all the way around the trunk of the tree and it either didn't leaf out or the leaves dried up and died back and the branches are brittle, then you should replace it. Some avid gardeners will try bridge grafting, which is very difficult, which basically is taking seedlings, planting them around the tree or pieces from healthy plants and grafting them above and below the rabbit damage. Very difficult to do, a lot easier to replace it. So I would say if you've still got leaf growth and it's putting on growth and they're not drying and dying up, there's still cambial tissue in that plant will make it. If it's dried up and dead, it's time to look for replacing it.
Mel, it's gone all too fast.
Always a pleasure. It is, Jim. Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity to visit with your listeners.
We look forward to your next visit. Melinda Myers of Milwaukee, host of the PBS television show Great Lakes Gardener. You can consult your TV listings to see when it's on in your area. And she will be at the Wisconsin Arborist Festival at Pierce Park in Appleton. You can see her there tomorrow morning. Coming up on Monday, Rick Sini of FairCompare.com talks about airfares, and Kirby Nelson and Steve McKean will talk about pairing cheese and beer here on the Ideas Network.